When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bob of the morning, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture. As always, I am your one true host, Jazzy J, joined as usual by my brother, the one true co-host, Buzzy Benjamin B. And Ben, I think it's hilarious that I managed to be the host on today, which is your birthday!
I was literally going to say, oh my gosh. So, yeah, we are meddlers over on Patreon. We're having a hootin' and hollering good time. In case anybody's ever curious, the way that we determine who the podcast host is we every person who signs up over on Patreon is able to cast their vote for either Buzzy B or Jazzy J. And we have respective tiers for both of us. So you can do all the different tiers. Just we have like one option for you or for me. And then we also have like our mega tier, which allows somebody like 100 votes at once.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, people will hop in there because they know that it's like close enough otherwise.
They like to cause that wonderful Jazzy J chaos.
That's it. Yeah. Bringer of Chaos indeed is really your go-to play. But we had GoFest last week based on listenership. You would have heard the episode from last week. And I guess that they were like, oh, it'll be so much fun because of GoFest. Like, we'll change things up. And I was like, yeah, because it's my birthday. When it was Jay's birthday, he got to be host. But it's okay. I'm at the end of the day, the thing we always say is that we win together. So you
know, that's right. That's true.
That's all that matters. True. So we're on the same team.
But I am the one true host of this episode.
You do have the as always in there.
I know.
As always.
It's funny because it's almost never true.
It's all right. Either way, congrats on hostmanship. And as long as we're talking about the Patreon, we are bringing back the D&D episode.
Yeah, we are.
I'm so excited about. Basically last year at this time, we had our set of dice. We did a dice set, a custom set of dice set. And so this year around, we're doing, it's a similar vein. There's still a dice involved, but it's like a rocks glass, if you can imagine. So picture yourself like a clear, short glass that can hold fluids extremely well, and like literally like half like impaled into the side of the glass. I don't know how to describe this because you can't impale glass, but like it's like the glass has been melted, and inserted into that melt point is a D20 with a 20 perfectly facing out, and then etched onto the glass as well will be the Popcorn Culture logo. So in accompaniment for the rocks glass, you will also get a digital download of a brand new episode of D&D.
Yeah, we're gonna do another in-office D&D campaign in here. Super excited. By the way, if you couldn't follow what Ben was saying, it's just a rocks glass with a D20 melted into the side.
Did I not say it that simply? I was just like, you know, my brain was like literally, I swear this is happening right now. Like, I think that my memory is actively like on the fritz.
Yeah.
Because partially I think because the month of October has been nothing shy of Nutter Butters for us.
It has been super extremely busy between the GoFest meetup and the live trivia show, and you just got back from Las Vegas.
Yes, I did. So once again, I got to go to the When We Were Young Music Festival in Las Vegas, which was just so much fun. I feel like I got to see Blink 182 live, which was like the dream kind of.
Oh, absolutely.
It was, you know, it's so funny with that band in particular because I always think about this. Like, I feel like this is always the thing that's on my mind. Is sort of like when you find things that are kind of like newly popular, it's like they're a fad, you know, it's like they're popular now, but like how will they hold up to the test of time? Like that is like the true measure of art. Like nothing can be deemed, well, I mean it can be, but like, you know, things become art when they have survived for large lengths of time.
Yeah, I mean it's like interesting because some stuff will like, they'll be really popular and then it'll sort of like fade, and then it's like the nostalgia will like bring it back.
Yes. And I think that that was like sort of interesting to me because I feel like when I was in high school, I remember all the like the guys who like, you know, were in like, you know, in bands and stuff like that were huge fans of like 80s hard rock.
Yeah.
And that was always one of those things where I was kind of like, I always felt as though each of those kids' parents really liked that music. And so that was what they were told was like, this is like real music.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is like what they had listened to, like, and you know, versus all this like newfangled pop music, yeah, and radio
pop music and boy bands and stuff.
Exactly. And so, you know, as ever, you know, I think growing up, I remember having, we had the Green Day Dookie album
like, yeah, we did.
Super early. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely, you know, like I loved that. I remember, you know, just tuning in all the time, listening to it. But then I remember, actually I think our younger brother Tyler was the first person to get like a Blink 182 album, on CD. And I remember just like being like, man, this sounds so cool. Like so much fun.
Yeah.
But for years, it never felt like you could say like Blink 182 is my favorite band. Like it always felt like it's like, that's not really like, well, actually for me, it felt perfectly fitting because it was like, everybody always knows I'm just not very good at music anyway. So it's like, of course it is.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet Ben. You know, like,
I think, as much as I like, I mean, I've liked Blink 182 just forever. But yeah, I think the first person I ever knew who like, was like, just like gushing over them was I doubt you're listening, but her name was Katie, and she was in my sixth grade class.
Okay.
And
shout out to Katie.
And at the time, probably not true anymore, but and I say this with all of the you know, the mindset of a 12-year-old in like the 90s, but she was the blondest person I've ever met. Just absolutely. I think is blonde one of those words? It's like you can't call people blonde anymore. Like that's like a I don't know.
I have literally no idea. I feel like there's like a great, I have always felt like blondes have done a fantastic job of branding as
right.
like, as
yeah.
like a,
yeah.
as like a hairstyle color appearance.
Hairstyle color,
you know?
Look, I love
people
blonde
just
hair.
Tried to bring it down. With
people
the,
are
like,
trying, look, every, like, yeah, with blonde all the jokes about blonde jokes are just people being jealous of blonde hair.
Like, yeah, right,
exactly.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, look, my wife is blonde and all of my children are blonder than the sun. Okay. So I have nothing against anyone with blonde hair, but I don't know if blonde jokes are as much of a thing anymore, but this girl was like a blonde joke, you know?
Okay.
And
okay.
This was my first introduction to Blink 182. And, I think that was, it's like one of those, like, this was your introduction point. So you have a lot of like restructuring to do since then.
I understand what you're saying. And I think probably like the real thing there is that like occasionally if you went to high school with somebody or like in your formative years, someone who you didn't get on with as well introduced you into a concept and that was your foray into that concept.
Yeah.
Then like it always sort of like had an impact on how you interpreted, you know, who this band to be because or concept or you know, piece of pop culture media, whatever. Because I had a similar thing where I remember like in band class when I was in seventh and in eighth grade, like by eighth grade, I was like in the advanced band and I played percussion. And in my class with me was a seventh grade girl who was really into like Fall Out Boy. Mm-hmm. And I think that as a result, I was like, you know, I mean, it seems ridiculous now because I was probably like 8 months older than
right.
this person. You know, it's like they were
seventh grader.
I know. Yeah. Like she was not younger than me really. But right. like, I think that
teenagers
that was,
cannot be dictated coolness by people younger than them.
Right. Yeah. Exactly, yeah, it's just know? Like maybe that's just like a law of nature or something.
Yeah.
But like, you know, so in my head, as I like grew up and older and everything, like I always just sort of had like an idea of like what was like embodied by fandom of this particular fan was a band was. But then like, you know, you go and you see a lot of these bands like rock out in concert, and you're like, wow, okay, like they're going for it, like they are shredding right now. This is cool. Like it's like it is completely reframing my entire perspective on like what I thought I knew about this band this whole time.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so it's just super, super interesting, you know, to sort of like to have those, you know, mental restructurings falling into place. But anyway, so that impacted your view of Blink 182 from sixth grade for you would have been like, what, like 1999?
Yeah, like 19. That sounds about right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very early days.
That would
small things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the yeah. Nice. But so that, for me, that was like one of those. I remember when I was in college, actually, one of my professors had this thing where it was so important to him that you made it to office hours. And this was something that, like, as a college student, I should have taken more advantage of and just basically never did. But professors offer office hours where you can go and they are available to answer questions that you might have about the coursework or the class in general or the field in general.
Yeah.
Where you can just go and have like more of like a one-on-one discussion with somebody who's very smart about a particular subject. And so it was very important to him that you came to like within like the first week, you had to book a session and go to his office hours so that you knew where his office was.
Right.
And, you know, he asked like a myriad of questions. Some of them had to do with major. Some of them had to do with like, you know, why did you choose this particular college route or whatever? But the last question he asked was like, who is your favorite band or what was your favorite song? And I remember like sitting in that class and I can go back to the moment clear as day, like looking at the sheet of paper and being like, I can't put Blink-182. What will he think of me? You know, like, it's like, this is going to, like, I can't say that, you know,
this will impact my whole future.
I know. Yes,
it's going on my permanent record.
It was like I have the answer in my heart, and then I have the what I believe is the correct answer in terms of how this very smart professor will interpret me as a student.
Oh my gosh! So this okay, this reminded me of a recent therapy session I had.
Okay.
Let me. Do you want to know one of my least favorite like icebreaker questions ever?
Least favorite icebreaker questions ever. Hang on. Let me think.
Okay.
What's your favorite breakfast food?
No.
What's your favorite meal?
No.
Neither of these.
Oh boy, I have stories about those too.
Okay. Yeah. Is there anything else? What do people ask about? The other thing I hate for icebreakers is when they do the like round robin thing where it's like, okay, like you're going to say your name and then do a dance move or something like that. And it's like, you know, like, I'm Ben. And then you do like jazz hands or something. Like,
yeah.
The next person's like, okay, so that's Ben, jazz hands. And that's like, yeah. And I'm Jay. And you know, like,
that's it. Yeah. Right out of dance moves. It's like, yeah. Oh no.
I only know one. can I also
double jazz hands down low?
Yeah, exactly. What's your least favorite icebreaker question?
It is, if you were stranded on a deserted island, what three items would you bring with you?
This is such a prime example of there is the correct answer to the question, and then there is like...
But correct how?
But that's a good point.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, what I need to know is, are you actually trying... Like, if I'm trying to survive, it's probably like a piece of rope, a tarp, and like a sharp blade, machete,
right.
Large knife... of sorts.
You I know? Find this like, to be such an unproductive question.
Yeah.
Because
right.
It's like, it's so hard to know what the person is truly asking you. Like, are they because almost no matter what, when this question comes up, it immediately turns into what would you need to survive?
Yes.
You
know? Right.
It's like, I right. don't think that's really what the question is trying to get. Like, if you could only, if you could only bring three items to a deserted island, what would they be? And it's like, I don't think the person's asking like, what do you think are the three most important survival tools?
Right. Yeah.
You
for, know? For like a therapy lesson, like asking somebody like, hey, how would you survive if you had very little is probably, it feels yeah. like, it's like, that's not a good, that's not, fun. Not yeah.
So right. It's like, and not only very little, but you have very limited options. You can bring almost anything, but just there's a limited quantity.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it also immediately feels like too, cause I mean, I think what they're really trying to say is they're trying to, like trick you into revealing the things that are otherwise like so important to
yes.
like to you that you're like, I could not live without. But then like there's, I think that the other part of me, it would be like, you know, like let's say like, you know, like we'll go with the example from before, like, so Blink-182, favorite band or whatever. It's like if you were to say like, you know, it's like, okay, three things. It's like you bringing that, you know, Blink-182 album with you. You're going to have a compact disc, you know, and a player.
Right.
So you can make sure you can like listen to it forever and ever and ever. It's like the rational part of my brain still can't get out of desert island mode. And it'd be like, doesn't matter if that's my favorite band. I know that I can live without listening to that music for the rest of my life. Like,
yeah.
I know I will survive.
There's also, or you could be like, well, I can't live without, or maybe you even feel like I want to bring a Blink-182 CD or something, but it would be like, but then I got to use my other item on CD player.
Oh, so yeah, right, you know, right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like okay, what can you package those together?
Yeah, you
it's
can
like,
pack. Yeah. Can you package those together? It feels right. like the better question would just be like, what are your three, if you were stranded on a desert island, everything else being, food and shelter being taken care of, what three, but you can only bring three books, what would you bring, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. But so yeah. like this, and then of course, this was my therapist asked me the other day was what three items would you bring? And I was like, I literally could not answer. We spent like 20 minutes on it. And I was just like, I don't like, I, especially in this setting where it's like, what are you trying to learn about me right now?
And it's
probably what she's learning is that like you're, and I think, you know, it's like, ultimately I'm still end up being very revealing about myself by not being able to answer the question. It's like, what does that say about me?
You know, it's like, it appears that commitment could be a bit of an issue because you can't commit to any objects.
That's not even it. It's like, I think what I sort of like started unpacking, this was the interesting part. I think what I started unpacking was that like, I don't know when someone asks me that, what's important to me in that interaction is that my responses are like the correct, impressive responses. I've got an item that doesn't land in the survival category, but also you haven't thought of before.
I know. And again, it's like you're like from your therapist's standpoint, like they are just trying to get a better understanding of who you are as to better help you.
Yeah.
And they're probably not like getting to the end of the day and being like, man, I heard the coolest answer ever today. Let me explain to you the sheer uniqueness that this human being brought to the table.
But in my mind, that is what they're going to do.
I want
them to be so impressed with my like clever take on this question because I know it's a common question. And it's like, I feel like it's like my brain can't not gamify it in that way.
Right.
It's like, what would I genuinely want to bring? It is, how can I win the game of answering this question better than people?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
in therapy, in a one-on-one conversation.
In a one-on-one conversation where she's not allowed to tell other people what I said.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that like probably even on some massive level and, you know, I would suspect that, your therapist is able to recognize this particular trait, but like it probably to me, what it says would be that like, you're still not quite at the stage of letting your guard down enough to allow like the true vulnerability to like pour through.
Yeah.
Which I have this exact same problem constantly.
Yeah.
Which is that like, it's like, you know, it's like you're supposed to go and it's supposed to be like pure open book, but being a pure open book is a freaking skill.
It's hard.
Like it is because you have to genuinely be letting go, letting your guard down, trusting this person completely and understanding that like they have your best interest at heart.
Well, let me just tell you, but I'm not even sure that that's necessarily it because it's not like I internally was like, I have something I want to say. I just don't feel like I can trust you with the information.
Sure.
It's like, I've been thinking about it for 4 weeks now. You know what I mean? And I'm like, this is the only thing I've landed on. I wonder if this is a good answer. Like, is this, I feel like it almost satisfies both sides of it where it's like, most people wouldn't say this, but it sort of falls into the survival camp and also falls into like, this is the sort of thing that's important to you camp. And the answer is a pillow.
A pillow.
A pillow.
Okay.
Because how are you going to sleep?
How are you going to sleep? This is, you know what? This is a good point. Yeah. It's like, I mean, at the end of the day, you still need to be able to sleep. Yeah. And the more properly rested that you are, assuming that you have food and shelter also taken care of, then your ability to be productive the next day is somewhat dependent on your ability to sleep.
So sometimes maybe just like pillow and blanket is my answer, is my new answer to this question. Because this is one of those things that anytime I've gone camping, like, you know, back GMA days when we would just, you know, take off in the middle of the night, there would so often be the case where you've got like, you know, 15 minutes to pack because, you know, we got to get out the door. It's already 10:30 at night, you know,
right?
We're missing time out there. And it'd be like, let me throw some things together. Let me run down and grab my sleeping bag out of the basement and be like, there's a camping pillow. Do I want to add that weight to my bag? By weight, I mean like less than an ounce. You know, like camping pillows, extremely not heavy.
Extremely not. They can be large-ish.
They can be.
I mean, they're packed down pretty small. But yeah.
Granted, we weren't going on like giant, like super long hikes. Like weight was not a concern. But it would be the sort of thing where like I'd be trying to reason it out and be like, I'm being smart by not including the pillow or something. But inevitably, I would regret not bringing the pillow.
I know. Yeah. Pillows are a very vital one. However, I still feel like this is maybe potentially revealing about some of your inner psychology at the moment. Because I feel like at the moment, one of the things that you've got is like the boys waking you up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, I think that that's like a daily, maybe not a daily struggle. Struggle seems like the wrong word, but like a factor.
It happened last night.
But like, you know, like a major factor in your life. So like, I'd be curious if you were like, let's say you're like empty nest stage of, you know, the process in life, or even just dating back to pre having kids at home without like the midnight wake up calls and stuff like that. Do you think pillow would still be on the list then?
I think so because.
Okay. That's good to know.
Because the more I've like focused on this question, I think I just pulled Pillow from deeper in my past, and I like remembered it. It's like what was really nagging me is that I remembered having an answer to it, and I think that was my old answer to it, and I was like, yes, I think that still works. But now I feel like I'm like stealing the answer from myself or something, you know.
there's a name in the wind piece.
You stole the answer from yourself.
But I don't know what it means.
Yeah,
but this is like the constant introspection that I feel like I'm always myself going through day in, day out, is that it's like, I feel like I can always sort of tell that this question is looming around me. I think a lot of times, especially like, you know, when I see people like extremely passionate about like this, that, or the other like activity that they're engaged in or something that they've committed to or something that they like really, really, really love, you know, and like I'll step back and I can't tell myself whether or not it's like a grass is always greener type of situation where anybody looking at me might be like, oh man, there's, you know, he's got like the YouTube channel and like his family and like, you know, these activities. And like, it may be the case that like from anybody else looking at my lifestyle or you know, my life construct might be like, might see all these things clear as day, like all the important things. But then like, because I live inside of like my own system, it's like, well, you can't say like, obviously like family is extremely important to me, but like, you know, does how do you incorporate that into like your three items question?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
no, you're stranded. You're alone. People aren't on the options.
You can't bring people.
Right.
Yeah.
So then it's like, oh, I don't want a picture of my family.
It's
like, oh, well, you didn't say a picture of family, doesn't care. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So, but anyway, I mean, that's like the big challenge. Okay. So you got Pillow.
I got Pillow.
Was there anything else were able to?
This is a month of thinking. This is where I've landed.
1 month.
I know. You see the trouble I'm having?
I do.
And like, I mean, bless my therapist. They were like trying to help me out so hard. They're like, does it help if it's like 5 items instead of 3? And I was like, not really. She's like as if like maybe I'm having trouble narrowing down or something. It was like, and then she like takes the reverse tact. It's like, what if it's just 1? It's like, maybe you just can't think of anything. And it's just like, it's closer to helping.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Like just one thing.
One thing.
Can I say a volleyball?
Yeah, exactly. You're a full castaway.
Yeah. This honestly, it's very interesting for me because I feel like it reminds me earlier this year when I went to go get my tattoo. You know, I was so excited because I through all of my like my quests and everything and like my own hangups and dilemmas and sort of like the knowledge that I knew I wanted to get one but didn't know what to get, and then I found an artist and like everything I saw that the artist did, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like ridiculously profound and it's so amazing and it like speaks to me in like all these ways that I can't describe. And you know, it was sort of like I felt like I had like stumbled into what most people who go to like art exhibitions like already know about their passions in life. Like when they look at something, it just like means something back to them. And I felt like when I was like looking at this particular person's art, I was like, this is like what's happening right now. I see the meaning in the image, and because I can see the meaning, it's like, that's what I've always wanted. And then I feel like when I got there, you know, I started like going through this whole process, and I told him right away, I was like, I really don't know like what I plan to do, what I hope to do, what I want from this experience. Like, I literally took videos of myself from the hotel room the night before being like, I go in 12 hours and I still don't know like what I'm going to say. And so like, I think the same thing, I think we got in there and I think he really, 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 really thought like, are you just afraid to like tell me what you actually want? Like, are you like somehow like ashamed that what you want is like a barbed wire, like sleeve or something like that? And you feel like, you know, it's like, is it the case that you're afraid someone will judge you for what you want? Or are you afraid that I will, you know, like have feelings one way or another? And the answer was like, no, it's like, I don't know how to tell you that. I literally don't know. And so at some point in time, I feel like he looked at me and he's like, you got to say something. And I was like, this is the problem, you know, like I mean, it's so weird how, there's this like just gigantic blockade that can like live up there and stand in the way of like your ability to communicate whatever is like so deep down inside of you.
Right.
So anyway, I know that that's not remotely helpful. I'm just saying I relate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so if I ever think of the other two items, I'll let you know.
Yeah, keep me posted. It's like, that'll be like the ultimate pop episode. The other two items.
I've discovered another item I'm bringing to the island with my pillow.
So maybe what we'll do, we'll lob it out to the little colonels out there. So if you guys have any feedback on this particular subject, what three items would you bring on the desert island? You have to be by yourself.
You can assume like food and shelter are taken care of.
And water.
Yeah.
Like the basic necessities in order to exist.
But no pillows, obviously, because then you wouldn't need to bring one. So there's no pillows on the island.
Yeah, that needs to be very crystal clear.
Yeah, come on.
Email all of your responses to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Deadly curious. But anyway, we'll move on from there. Transition?
Transition. Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me, it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paper clip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Okay, Jay, so I'm kind of excited about a detail that you have listed here in the show notes.
Yeah,
which is that you started reading Harry Potter to young Lukester.
I did start reading Harry Potter to Luke. So he's presently 5. He'll turn 6 next month.
Yeah.
So it's pretty close, pretty close. And we started about 4 nights ago or so. So we're doing about a chapter a night.
Okay.
And it was one of those where it was like, I was maybe waiting for him to be like a little bit older before I started. Like, we've been reading Charlotte's Web for a little while. We didn't actually get to the end before we just started Harry Potter.
But okay. Okay.
But part of why I wanted to read Charlotte's Web was because, one, he had gone and seen the play in person. So he was like semi-familiar with the story, which I thought would help him, like, you know, focus on what was happening on like this longer like chapter book,
right,
more or less.
Especially, you know, it's like, yeah, if you've got like some mental visuals as to like who these characters are and stuff, that kind of goes a long way.
That can go. And I think he was like following along. I mean, Charlotte's Web is like designed for kids anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was good. But the what happened was that, like, down in my office, I've got like all of my various Harry Potter books that like I've collected over the years, which is not like a ton, but we've got like every year my mother-in-law will get me the next like illustrated edition Harry Potter book, which they're up to the first 5, I think, at this point. So
yes,
I don't think even all 7 are out yet, but I've got all the ones that are. I've got like the Mina Lima Philosopher's Stone version, which is like the coolest version. It has got like, there's like pictures on the almost every single page. There's like interactive like pop-up things, and there's like unfoldable things. Like, you get to the letter, you can unfold the entire Hogwarts letter and then fold it right back in. You get to Diagon Alley, you can open it up and it takes up like 2 feet.
Amazing.
It's massive. It's so cool. And then I've got the 20th anniversary Gryffindor editions, because that is the ones that when we went to London and we were at the Platform 9 3/4 store, that's when Luke was like 3 weeks old or something. I was like, oh my God, I have to get him his first Harry Potter book.
Yes.
And so I got him those. And so we've got the first 3 of the Gryffindor set.
Okay, cool.
Down there. So anyway, one of Luke's favorite things to do is to go just rummage around through every single thing in the office.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he'll always come across the Harry Potter books, and he'll always be like, they look so impressive on the outside that they're very attractive to him as like something to like take. And he knows the 20th anniversary ones are his, but they're up on the top shelf, because I'm like, I don't like, don't mess with them, you know?
Right, right.
I don't want you to go ruining these special things I got for you.
Right. Like, this is the thing you're ready. Like, you know, if you were to like bring them to college or somewhere someday, it's like you want them to like be intact and not having like his 5-year-old version of himself, you know, tear a page or fold them in or spell something on it, like in the name of like, well, they're mine, so I can do whatever I want with them.
Exactly.
Like, you'll still appreciate them someday. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Nonetheless, the illustrated copies are like sort of down low. So sometimes I'll just like pull them off and start flipping through them and just looking at the pictures in general. And, you know, based on what we do for a living, it's almost impossible not to be exposed to Harry Potter stuff in some way.
Yeah.
You know, we've got like wands around the house. I've got a lot of t-shirts that have got Harry Potter things on them.
Right.
You know, it comes up a lot, yes, obviously. Yeah, so he knows, you know, a little bit about Harry Potter things. And so the other day he just had like he had all the different books down. He's like flipping through the Mina Lima one, doing all the pop-up ones. And I think specifically what he found at like near the back of that one, there's like a pop-up of the chessboard, the giant chessboard.
Oh yeah.
Of course, you know, Luke loves some chess. So that was like so exciting to him. And he was just like, all of a sudden he just had it in his brain that he just so badly wanted me to read him Harry Potter. He's like, I just want to know what the story is. I just want to know what's going on, you know?
Right.
And it was just like, oh. And it was like, I'm having this like crazy internal struggle like going on inside, because like, you know, on the one hand, like dream come true. Like, my little boy is like begging me to read him Harry Potter.
Right.
You know, I was like, I've been waiting for this moment my whole life. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't entirely know if you're like old enough to like understand the story if I start reading it to, like, are you going to be able to pay attention and follow along with what's happening? And I don't want to like ruin the first read through with like, I don't really remember. I remember dad read them to me. I don't want to read them again because I've already read them, but I don't actually remember what happened.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And and then I'm also just like, you know, by the time you get like several books in, it's like a little bit scary, maybe if you're like 5.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No. I mean, I think that there's certainly some pretty heavy stuff. I mean, it feels like, I mean, even really Chamber of Secrets. I mean, you know, the idea of there being a giant snake slithering through the castle that, you know, can potentially be deadly.
Yeah.
You know, it's not terrifying. And
right.
Prisoner of Azkaban, just like, hey, there's an escape murderer on the loose who's looking for a 13-year-old.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, oh, great. Yeah, good.
And a werewolf.
Yeah. He's pretty friendly, though.
Friendly werewolf until he's a werewolf.
Then it's kind of dangerous.
That's good.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. Like, I mean, it does seem like the, like five does still seem on the young end of the spectrum. And you also don't want to you're right. Like, you don't want to end up in like accidentally bursting the bubble where it's sort of like, it's like, well, now you know what happens. Like, now you know it's not Snape the whole time.
Right.
You know, even just for book one. So that like when you read it, when you're like, you know, 9 or 10, you know, when you will have a better comprehension for what all is going on, it's like you, like a lot of like the like, what? No way. Like moments have kind of already been like,
yeah, like maybe you already know they're coming.
Yeah. Like, have you already like spoiled it somehow?
Right. Like you've sort of spoiled it, but didn't like really appreciate the spoiler because you didn't really experience it firsthand to its fullest capacity.
Yeah. And you know, the interesting thing about this from like my perspective is like, I remember, watching Star Wars as like a little kid, but like not really having any idea what the actual plot was about, you know, or like a lot of like the important scenes to like explaining what's actually going on are not the scenes that stand out to like a little kid, but I liked the lightsabers and the
lightsaber
blasters
fights and X-Wings and
the Millennium Falcon and
Death Star, you
know,
boom,
right? Yeah, Ewoks and whatnot. Like, you know, there's like all like the little details where it's like, oh my gosh, like this is so cool, like this is so fun, but like I don't even think I really knew the plot for another, you know, 10 years.
Yeah, but to be fair, that didn't stop any of us from loving Star Wars, you know, deeply as kids.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So that's there's that. But so anyway, you know, I was like, you know, there's one night he's just like asking me over and over, like, can we please read it? And I was like, let me, you know, it's, first of all, as you're asking me, it's like 9 o'clock at night, you know, it's the weekend, we've stayed up late, you're already cranky, I'm not starting on a whim like this, you know, you don't understand how emotional it is for me to be reading it to you, you know,
right
like you can't possibly understand the impact this story has had on your life without you realizing it,
right?
You know,
yeah.
So like, you know, I need to like mentally prepare, and I wanted to like talk to Beth, and you know, we sort of talked about it, and we were like, well, I mean, you know, he just like really, really wanted to. And like the next morning, I like got out of the shower, and he's like standing outside my bathroom door, just like on his knees, holding the book up, just like, Daddy, please read it to me. And I was just like, I don't know what more I could possibly be hoping for. You know?
Right, yeah, so like, it's like, okay, this feels like the moment.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, all right. Let's go. Let me get dressed. Yeah. Put some clothes on here.
Yeah. Imagine if like Luke's first ever interaction, you're just like in a towel.
Yeah, just in a towel. Just like, all right, let's go read.
Yeah.
So yeah, go get some coffee. We sat down and we like went and read the first chapter and stuff. And it was, I mean, it's hard to know if he's really following it like that much. Like it is like the chapters are a little long, I think, to like maintain his like attention, especially without like the pictures and stuff. But
right.
Like the Mina Lima version of the book does have a lot of pictures on it. So sure. There's that. But the other, like, I don't know if this is even an issue or just sort of like a funny, cute thing, but like he will want to like have me be reading one book and for him to be holding another one. He just wants to like look at the pages as I'm reading it, as if he's reading it too.
Okay.
So he'll be like, did you turn a page? And it'll be like, yes, I turned a page. But like, because one book is bigger than the other, the pages don't match up exactly.
Okay.
So it's a little bit confusing. And then like, he'll just want to switch which book we're looking at. So it's like, I think it would just be better if we had one book and he was just like forced to sit and listen rather than be like distracted by what he's holding in his hand.
Right.
All
that
the
makes
time.
Sense. Yeah.
But so I think, yeah, we are like halfway through the fourth chapter. So, you know, Harry has been delivered to the Dursleys. He has made he has talked to the boa constrictor at the zoo. They've gone to the Hut on the Rock. Hagrid has showed up and he's told him he's a wizard.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's been, that's all happened so far. And it's like, I keep getting through these like big parts and I'm like, you know, choking up, like trying to get through the next sentence. And he's just like, blah, blah, you know, he's like over there. And I'm like, no, this is an important part. And it's like, you're a wizard, Harry, you know?
Right.
This is like a big deal. But it's like, to Luke's like, he already knows Harry's a wizard. wizard a little bit.
Right. It's like, yeah, like this is not shocking at all.
Not shocking information to him as it was for me when I first read the books, which is like, I look back, I'm like, how did I not realize?
Right. How old was I?
You know, I don't know. But what is hilarious, I think, is that the other thing is that on the, like the outside cover of the books, there's like the, or especially the Mina Lima one, like in the four corners of the cover, there's like a little symbol for Gryffindor, Slytherin, Hufflepuff, and Ravenclaw. And he's just sort of like looking at all of them and he's like, what's this one? I like this one. And it's like the Slytherin one. So, since in the past week, Luke has full on committed to Slytherin house, like with no prompting from me, you know.
Wow.
He is just like all about it. And I'm like, just so you know, while we're reading, the Slytherins will be the bad guys. Like in real life, not really, but in the book, they're the bad guys. Just so you know.
and try not to be terribly alarmed.
Yeah.
The main Slytherin that we know looks exactly like you.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh my God, you were like just such a little Malfoy going right now. No, yeah. So channeling it. It's like so cute though. And then this was like, this was just like a random probability fell in my lap, like a lottery thing. But like he has seen like on, you know, the TikTok filters before, like, you know, sometimes it'll be just like, you know, it'll like do like a random selector thing on your head.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he's
yeah.
can you do like a Slytherin, like TikTok thing or something? And I was just like, yo, like, is there like a TikTok filter that will sort you into a house? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, probably, you know, almost 1,000%.
Yes. It's like I don't know for sure, but there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There absolutely that exists. And he's like, can we just do it? And I'm like, okay, sure. You know, and I'm like, we've got like a 1 in 4 chance that this is going to be the best role ever. And it's going to land on Slytherin and he's going to be so happy with it.
Right.
So I pull it up and I find that, yeah, exactly what we're looking for. It's like a little thing that puts a sorting hat on you and it just flips through the houses and lands on one, you know.
Right.
That's all we're looking for. But as I point it at him, it's like I'm still in the picture too. And it turns out it can do 2 people at once. So all of a sudden, just like, oh, I'm like, you know, learning how the filter works on the fly. And it just starts going, you know. And all of a sudden it like pops down and filters down and it lands both of us in Slytherin. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a good roll.
Oh man, that is so fun.
I know. So I mean, he was so happy about it too. So fun. So so we're big on Slytherin. I'm like, and then, you know, he's like, what house is mommy? I'm like, mommy's in Gryffindor. Yeah, so there's that. And I'm like, you know, and Harry's in Gryffindor, just so you know. Like, you know. Like, so I don't want you to be disappointed that the main character is going to be in the other house.
But don't worry, there's that one redeeming guy.
There is, yes. Slughorn.
Kind of.
Sort of. Eventually. Draco. Right. Draco's mom's okay. yeah. So that's been very fun. So it's like it's so funny, like dealing with him being like so about Slytherin, like as like a 5-year-old though, because like, you know, me as an adult who's like very publicly a Slytherin, it's like I know that people who like interact with me as a Slytherin are like old enough to understand that, like, you know, the villainous side of it has sort of died down in the fandom.
Yes.
But he has come home from school where it's like, you know, you have to like write a sentence in your journal and it'll be like, his sentence is like, I'm in Slytherin. You know? and I'm like now from most 5-year-old perspectives, or like probably 5 to 10, if you're familiar with the Harry Potter books, you probably think of Slytherin as the bad guy. Or if you're like the teacher, you probably think the students think the Slytherins are the bad guys.
Right. It's like, you like write a letter.
I know. I'm like, just so you know, so, but another, but he's like so excited about it. It's like, I don't care. You know, obviously this is great news for me.
Yes. Yes. No. Well, and what I think would be really funny, and I mean, you don't have to commit to this idea. I just, it's like a curiosity rolling through my head, but I know that when you were buying him the 25th anniversary,
the 20th copy? Anniversary.
20th. Yeah. When Lukester was born, he was a NICU baby,
yep.
Which was extremely sad, very scary. And like through that process, and then our subsequent, like, very unbelievable opportunity where we were invited out by Google to do the History of Magic sort of like exhibit and collaboration with Google Arts and Culture was like, I think, so if Luke was born on end of November, and then we went on like mid-January, like January 15th. Yeah,
so he's like, it was like end of November, it's November 29th. So he's like 5 weeks old or something.
Right, so he was basically, and he'd only been home
for like 3 weeks.
So like when we went, it was kind of like one of those opportunities where it's like, well, we have to go, because like this is like the this is what we had been hoping for basically the whole time.
Yeah, we're being asked to collaborate with Google and Pottermore, so.
At the same time.
Yeah, at the same time.
Like, okay, yeah, we're in.
We're in.
But the idea was, or the point is that I'm trying to make, is that at that point in time, you know, like we definitely saw Luke as a Gryffindor, because it was like he had been so brave as like a little, you know, a little baby,
yeah,
like making it through like this kind of scary situation and sort of like tumultuous time and everything and getting home. And so it was like, you know, he definitely embodied that Gryffindor sentiment. And as such, I know that you've collected the first three books for him. It would be kind of interesting though, if like, you know, now that like at age five, if he's like, I'm a Slytherin, you know, like if you got like the fourth book
in the Slytherin colors.
And then, you know, like I like, because the thing about me is that like I feel like Luke is very intelligent.
Oh yeah.
And so like I could totally
not dumb.
Yeah. I could totally see him embracing the Ravenclaw banner at some point as well. So what I just think would be kind of interesting or fascinating would be like, you know, if by the time he does go to college or wherever, you know, eventually at some point in time, and he's got a collection of books, and it's like, why are the first three Gryffindor and then a Slytherin and a Slytherin and then like Ravenclaws?
Yeah, you know, yeah. like a mix.
Yeah, it's sort of like
no Hufflepuff. No,
yeah, maybe not. It's just like, but it would be so funny, because I feel like it would be like, you know, as I grew up, my dad kept buying me the book that he felt like at the time most accurately represented my personality. And so at the beginning, you know, there was this reason for the Gryffindors. And then, you know, when I first was introduced to it, when we first reading it, I really attached on to the Slytherins. And then as I got older and, you know, like whatever, and not that he absolutely will become a Ravenclaw or anything like that, but.
Right. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be cool if like, you know, he sort of like ultimately, cause that's been my whole thing with like the whole sorting, is like, it's really fun to embody your house and to embrace your colors and, you know, to have your comrades out there in the world who sort of like resonate like with your spot in things and everything. But I feel like as I've gotten older, I mean, and you know this about me, I've gone through every house, you know, I mean, I at different points in time, I just literally, I'm like, you know, it's like, you know what? I've like, we have the mugs. So at the end of each year for the past several years, we've done like the animal mugs for Carlin Brothers Coffee, where we've got like one for each, you know, respective house by color. And so here at the office, we have several sets of them. And so every morning when I'm grabbing my coffee, it's like, I will go through like month long phases where I will only pick up the red mug.
Right.
And then I'll go through like month long phases where I'm always picking up the yellow mug.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, depending on like where I'm at in life and like my circumstances around me, it's like I've sort of like embraced all of them. So that's sort of been like one of those things where like I love the sorting, and the sorting is so fun. And if you identify heavily like with any of the houses, then it's like perfect and it's awesome.
Yeah.
But I also feel like the further into it I get, the more I love all four of them.
Right.
You know, it's like, which I feel like on some levels maybe a little bit the point. Like, you know, it's like you said before, none of them are actually evil. Like if you identify as Slytherin, that doesn't make you a bad person.
Right.
It just means like your values align, you know, with that. Or you like green. You
exactly.
Know?
Like, I think mostly Luke likes snakes. Or he likes the snake logo is what it seems like he likes a lot.
I know that also I was gonna say is very interesting to me, because I feel like so far he's still like maybe a little hazy on like some of the dogs in the family. Like our parents have Dougal, who's actually named after Dougal McGregor.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, but Professor McGonagall's once love.
Yeah, exactly.
Dougal is a boxer and full of energy and can be a little intimidating if you're a small child and, you know, at eye level with him and stuff. But like, it would be interesting to me if like somehow Luke was having more trouble with dogs and then completely cool with snakes.
I think if there was a snake on, you know, the ground in front of him or in his room, he would be super afraid of it.
I mean, to be fair, that makes sense.
No doubt. But maybe just the drawings of it look cool or something.
It does look,
I don't know.
Cool. Pretty
at
boss.
The moment, at the moment, we're heavy Slytherin.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's pretty funny. Even when he came to the GoFest booth, he was like looking at all the foil shirts and he found like the green one. And I was like, ooh, this is the Slytherin one. He was like, oh, you know, and he was like very excited about it. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. So. That is so cool. Okay. Well, little Lukester, Slytherin.
There you go.
I love it.
So actually, I've been trying to think about this since you brought up the idea of having like a mixed set of 20th anniversary books. So if you're listening and you don't know, the 20th anniversary Harry Potter books, you can buy all 7 books. They're like, there's like 7 Gryffindor versions of the book and 7 Slytherin versions of the book.
Right.
And
Yeah, the pages on the exterior, like if you've ever seen like gold foil pages, these are they're inked but printed as like alternating like red and yellow stripes or green and silver stripes.
So
or,
if you were going to go through and you just wanted to like theme them and get like make get the house version of the book for what made the most sense for each year, how would you do it?
Ooh.
Well, I think Philosopher's Stone's definitely the Gryffindor copy.
It feels like it. And then, I mean, Chamber of Secrets, I actually feel like is a little bit of a coin flip because it seems like the whole idea is that all of Chamber, Harry's sort of struggling with whether or not he's supposed to be in Slytherin.
Right.
But it's also the whole Heir of Slytherin book. That's like the primary, like, so I think you could go Slytherin.
You could go Slytherin,
for book two.
I think so. Prisoner feels like you're just right back to Gryffindor.
It does, because, I mean, you're really getting, like, the story of Sirius and Lupin and
Peter and James.
So it's
Harry. Yeah, so
yeah.
Very Gryffindor book.
Right.
And then I think for Goblet, you could either, it's almost coin flip, because like between Hufflepuff and Slytherin.
I would say Hufflepuff, because you got Cedric.
Well, because if you don't do Hufflepuff for this one, you're not going to do it for any of them.
You got to give
them. Yeah, it's like if you want one of, at least one of each, you got to give this one. But Voldemort comes back.
I know. I think you have to give it to Cedric because I do feel like that's another one of those. Like there's the, we've talked about it before in a video on Super Carlin Brothers before, but one of my all time favorite lines from the movies of all things is at the wake for Cedric. When Dumbledore describes him as a fierce, fierce friend.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know why, but it's like that particular sentiment to me has always Cedric was always cool. He's definitely like a very nice person to Harry, despite, you know, some of the circumstances or possibly like the fact that Harry is like kind of getting a little bit of like the attention that the Hogwarts champion should have been getting.
Yeah.
But I feel like it always really like made like Cedric like come together completely as a character for me, where I was like, man, like he was just a good person. Like this is just a good person who is a bystander of this really terrible set of events.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I would give that to Hufflepuff House.
Okay.
No problem at all.
Cool.
Order of the Phoenix, you've got the intro to Luna. Which is like, it's maybe not the most like pivotal hinge, you know, for the overall story.
But you've got the introduction of Luna and he's like briefly dating Cho.
That's true.
So you could probably go Ravenclaw for Order of the Phoenix.
I think you can make that argument.
Yeah.
But then if you get to Half-Blood Prince. It feels like it's Slughorn and Snape.
Yeah, Slughorn. That one's Slytherin.
It's Slytherin.
Yeah, get the Slytherin copy. And then Deathly Hallows is just definitely Gryffindor.
It just has to be Gryffindor.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So there you go. I think that's pretty good.
That'd be a fun little set. That would be a fun little set.
Yeah.
It's like each one kind of like respectively. I like how we laid them all out too. That works really well.
All right.
That would make for a rather beautiful display.
It'd be cool. It'd be like, why didn't you get all the same? And it'd be like, well, let me tell you.
I'm so glad you asked.
I'm glad you brought up a lot of points I'd like to argue about.
What an excellent icebreaker. By the way, what would you bring on Desert Island?
I'd bring these books.
Yeah, probably. That's actually not a terrible answer.
Not bad. Yeah. I would bring a set of Harry Potter books.
Right. That counts as one.
Yeah.
Even though
that's
it's
one.
Right. They come in a box.
Since they come in a box together.
Right. It's fine.
Let's face it. I've read them this many times thus far. I haven't gotten tired of them. So.
Right. I glued them together. All the
ends. Yeah. A big, like a Wumbo dictionary.
Hold on. Yeah, I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right. Well, very cool. So I'm glad that you made this huge step forward. That's exciting.
I know. I'll keep you posted. Who knows? Hopefully we can just make it through Philosopher's Stone unscathed and we don't like stall out at any point, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. You got one more transition left in you?
Sure.
Transition. Okay, Jay, let me tell you about something that I did. So I had my fun-filled weekend,
yes.
Of course, you know, where I was off to Las Vegas, which was just a hooting and hollering good time. I did a bunch of really cool things while I was there. I went to an ice bar where, like, they give you parkas and the whole room is ice and the glass that they give you your drink in is made of ice. And it was just overall, like, a really cool experience, especially for someone who, like me, loves ice.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. Yes.
Yeah, that was like Allie's like surprise for me. She was sort of like, so I booked a thing, and I was like, oh man,
booked a thing.
But we also went to, you know, like a really cool restaurant where it wasn't like a Michelin star, but I mean it was like that kind of vibe where, like, you know, they I was telling you a little bit about it earlier, but, like, you know, one of the dishes that they gave you was like a stone shot glass that had like whipped peas in it, almost like mashed potatoes, but they were, like, you know, beautifully displayed, topped with like a creamy, savory whipped cream type thing on top and stuff like that. So, like, every bite you took was, like, not big or filling, but every single bite was like an experience. And it was like, well, that's really neat. And
that is cool.
Yeah, it was super neat. So it was like a whole like plate. Now, what is it called when you have like each of you buy like a menu and then they just come through and like they just keep bringing you stuff as the night goes on. It's tapas basically. But anyway, it was extremely good. We went to the festival, went to a Titanic exhibit. We went to an exhibit called Bodies, which was fascinating, but it was like scientific breakdown of the human bodies and anatomy and like all these unbelievable displays of like what nerves look like and all sorts
of man. Wild stuff. I have a Berenstain Bear book that does that.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I'll have to check that one out. Yeah, see how they compare.
Oh my gosh, they go to the doctor and they're like, the body is an amazing thing. It's got a system of nerves and muscles and blood. And it's like, but like each one is accompanied by this like very like 2D, a little too detailed drawing of like the insides of a Berenstain Bear.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I could see that being. It's like, okay, maybe we're too informative.
I know. I'm like, can we turn the page? Jeez.
Yeah. I think that like we were all sort of blown away. They have like this unbelievable display of like how blood moves through the body. And I think so it was me, Alice, sister-in-law Sammy, and brother-in-law Mike. And I think me, Allie, and Sammy were all like, wow, blood doesn't just sort of like float around and you're not just like a big blag of blood. It's like, you know, it's a flowing,
it's like in your veins and stuff.
It's
yeah,
like, well, it's like veins and like all the capillaries, and I'm sure I'm not saying the right words, but anyway,
you know, it's like that, you know, you say it and it's like when I think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, blood travels through veins, but it's like if you cut yourself anywhere at all, you will bleed.
Yes, and yeah, they had like the full display of like what the inner workings of your body is. So it's like when you cut yourself, it's like you're cutting one of these like tubes that carries blood through your body. It's not just floating underneath your skin. And Mike was like, yeah, guys, yeah. Are you serious? You don't know this right now? And we were like, we didn't really know how this worked, you know? Yeah. So I was like, I'm not going to, I mean, like, I know what veins are, but I just sort of thought that blood was just sort of like underneath the skin. You're just like a big rapper. anyway, long story long though, I'm giving the list of all the
various... must be such tiny tubes.
They're real small.
There's got to be, because like,
I'm glad you're appreciating the gravity of the situation.
No, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, cause I'm like, okay, so if you just removed your skin, that means the blood wouldn't just go everywhere. But like I've had situations where I've just peeled skin off and it's like, and you're bleeding.
Yeah.
So it's like just the act of peeling it must rip the tubes.
Right. Well, and I think that like, especially there's a lot of them in your hands. Which is why, like, if you cut like a finger or something, it might be more inclined to like bleed more versus like, you know, your shin or something like that. I don't know. I've cut my shin before pretty badly.
Yes, you have.
Yeah. You were there.
I was there.
You took me to the hospital. I got stitches. Sorry, it was the middle of the night. Anyway, I bring all of this up because while I was in Vegas, I did lots of really interesting and cool things. But one night in the middle of the night, I woke up. And I couldn't sleep. And I was like, I was laying there and it's just sort of like one of those like times where you wake up and you're like hot, you know, and it's just like, and like my mouth was parched and I was just like, I don't know, I need to go and like move or something. And like, I just can't lay here because I'm so uncomfortable just because it feels like
have a pillow.
I didn't have a pillow. Disrupted the flow entirely.
Yeah.
So I was just like, whatever. And normally in the middle of the night, I am terrible at this particular instance. Like if I wake up in the middle of the night, I will not allow myself to go and do anything at all for any reason. Like a lot of times it might even be like, I really need to go to the bathroom. And like, I'll be like, but you probably shouldn't get up because you might make make noise and disturb somebody, and like you mm-hmm. can't have that. So it's like don't move, just lay here and just like sweat and stare at the ceiling fan all night. It'll be fine.
Right. You know, you just have to wait until 7, then you can go pee.
Right. Yeah. The sun will awake, and when it does, then you're allowed to move about the house.
Yeah.
But like, you know, when Allie wakes up in the middle of the night, she's like I'll just like hear her, you know, get out of bed and go downstairs and like watch TV or something, or you know, like scroll on her phone, or I don't know, go to the bathroom because you're allowed to do that in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things. But no, for me, I'm usually stuck there. But so I was in the hotel room, and the view that we had from the hotel room was of the festival grounds. And so I was like, I'm like out walking around, and I like, you know, got a drink of water, and I'm like just sort of looking out at everything that's going on, like taking in like all the people at night who like go and like do things on the festival grounds. Like actually with like Disney World, for example, I've always thought it'd be like really interesting just to be like a fly on the wall at night, like when all the people come in to like pressure wash the sidewalks and the gardeners do all the gardening type things. And
yeah,
you know, it's like people are there all day, and then you think like, oh, but at night it's empty. And it's like, but it's not empty.
It's not empty.
Everybody's there fixing stuff, painting benches and whatnot.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, it was cool just to like sit there and watch that. So I'm like, all right, I need something to like, you know, sort of distract myself or whatever, like way to take in the evening. So I literally, I've been thinking so much about my splitting wood, you know, gym idea where like, you know, we go out and we just like split wood and, you know,
yeah,
talk about our feelings and stuff.
Of course.
Wood splitting activities.
Yeah.
And so I literally Googled, I was like, videos of people splitting wood.
Yeah.
And what popped up was this, it was like an older gentleman who was just, you know, like out on his land or whatever. And he just seemed like a really nice guy. And he quoted Robert Frost. And I was like, this guy's so fun. What a cool thing. And it's like, and now I'm going to split some wood. And so he goes through and he, you know, he's like explaining like how he's using like a specific kind of maul versus like an axe, and you know where to strike on the log in order to like actually get the best split. And it's not the middle, it's actually like the edges and all these types of things. And so I'm just like, this is so cool. And I get to sort of like the end of the video, and I was like, you know, it's like a 7-minute long video, so this is not like a huge commitment of my time so far. And he's like, you know, now I'm no Buck and Billy Ray Smith or anything like that, but you know, I hope you enjoyed today's video, and you know, comment, like, and subscribe. And I was like, wait a second, fucking Billy Ray Smith. I was like, do you mean to tell me that there is like a known YouTuber for wood splitting?
Oh,
and
Buck and Billy Ray Smith.
And yeah. So I'm like, what was that? I'm like Googling it, and you know, it pops up, and right away, you know, it's like I'm you know, the guy's got like 500,000 views, and I was like, okay, that's kind of, or not 500,000 views, 500,000 subscribers. And I'm like, you know, I'm looking at one of his videos, and it's got hundreds of thousands of views, and I, you know, I click on it, and it sort of starts, and it's campy for sure, but like, you know, it starts, and there's this video of this, like, you know, it pans in, and there's like a huge pile of like axe handles in this like, you know, rugged old barn looking thing, and underneath, you know, is Buck and Billy Ray Smith, who like pops out from underneath, and he's like, rah! You know, like a monster emerging from the ground or something. And he goes outside and he starts like swinging the axe and like, you know, splitting these logs and stuff like that. And I'm like, what did I just stumble into?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is truly an odd experience. And I was like, I don't think I'm gonna like this. And so he starts talking though, and he's just like the friendliest person you have ever witnessed. Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's super Canadian, super nice, and loves splitting wood and loves old axes. And so he's just like, as these like videos are unfolding, they're like 30-minute videos.
Yeah.
And they're not like specifically instructional videos. He doesn't have like an obvious like objective, but like he'll go out there and uncut, he'll just like, ha, uncut. That's a splitting joke for you right there.
Yeah.
But he'll just like start talking about stuff or the world or like whatever. And I'm like, this is oddly peaceful. And so I watched like 5 or 6 of these like 30-minute videos.
Just in the middle of the night.
In the middle of the night from like, you know, like 3 to 5 a.m. or something like that. And I was like, this was the best thing ever. And like, I'm literally to the point where I was like, maybe my mission in life was to find this particular person so that somehow I can write like a screenplay about it and have Chris Pratt, who the guy looks like, play the character of Buck and Billy Ray Smith.
Buck and Billy Ray.
It was like the most enabling experience I've ever had towards this idea of just splitting wood for fun, because in this, like,
yeah, I feel like, why do you need permission to do it?
I don't know why I need permission to do it. Like, I don't have proximity to do it. I feel like sometimes it feels like mildly dangerous or otherwise just like a such a novelty exertion of energy You know, like where it's like the idea of going, and I mean, it's not that different from marathon training where you're going out and intentionally making yourself incredibly exhausted in the name of achieving some goal.
Yeah.
You know, which is way more widely accepted. But it was so funny to me because I feel like, you know, I've talked about this since the pop has been going on. I feel like I've brought up wood splitting a million times as like a concept or a pastime or whatever. But like, as I was watching this, as I was even like reading the comments of all of these people, like, for example, at one point in time, Buck and Billy Ray Smith goes over to his dad's house because of course he does to help him split wood. Just that's the subject of this video. It was like, I went over to dad's. I brought my wood splitter with me. We're going to split some stuff by hand. He gets there and his dad's using a Fisker's axe, which is something you might buy at like Lowe's or something. And everything like, you know, he's always like rebuilding axes. So I was like, oh, he's about to dog on the Fisker's axe. Not at all. You know, they were just like, oh, you got the Fiskars. That's so cool. How are you liking it? You know, I'm like, you know, it's just the whole thing was just amazing to me. I was enamored with it. And I actually, despite the fact that it is what I do for a living, I have never been a grand consumer of YouTube-based content before. Mm-hmm. Like, I've probably watched more booking Billy Ray Smith videos at this point than most of the YouTubers that, like, we know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was like, this is the most unusual thing that's ever happened to me. But I was like, I can't believe that of this wild weekend experience, the watching these videos in the middle of the night by myself in front of the window was like a necessary piece of what made the trip worth it. You know, it was like,
that's fun.
I'm gonna have to show it to you.
I'm very curious about it now. Honestly, what I kind of like about the story is the first guy you found. And like where you said, he's just sort of talking and he said, I'm no Buckin' Billy Ray Smith.
Yeah.
Like, because like in his mind, it's like, it's super clear to him that like, I, this is just me projecting maybe, but it's like, I'm imagining that to him, his impression is that everyone watching him is just like, you're just copying Buckin' Billy Ray Smith, man.
Oh,
what are
sure.
you doing? You know,
sure.
And he's hyper, like almost certainly that's inspired him to do what he's doing.
Right.
Or whatever. And it's like in his mind, it's like, it's so clear that I am trying to recreate this and that no one could like my content for me, but I'll like notice it or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, or maybe that's true in that section of the internet. I don't know much about wood splitting or whatever, it reminds me like the early days of Super Carlin Brothers. Like I used to watch a lot of the channel Wheezy Waiter.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just had this running gag in like a lot of his videos where he'd be like, the coffee's ready. I love it when the coffee's ready.
Yes.
And like, so I remember like in some of the early videos, like I would, you know, like we'd be making these videos at like, you know, 7 at night. So sometimes I would just brew coffee.
Yeah.
And it would be like, I'd hear the beeper go off and I would literally like just mid script be like, you know, I'd like just make that joke to the camera. Like how everyone knows everyone who would be watching me clearly is subscribe to Wheezy Waiter, one of the most successful people in the world, you know.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and I'm like, no, what it will be lost on nobody at all. And it was like, come to find out, it's like, I don't think almost anybody got the reference.
Anybody knew that what you were doing was like a Wheezy Waiter thing.
Right. I was doing like a Wheezy Waiter, but like my mind, I was like, it's so risky to say that because people are gonna like, you know, think I'm just trying to like copy him or something. But then, you know, I did it like 2 or 3 times. And I was like, I think people just thought it was just my joke.
Right.
You know. And
right.
I'm like, no. No, this is impossible, you know?
Well, so on that exact note, so the other thing we were doing, of course, was we basically emulated the Vlogbrothers format.
Yeah.
And so like that was kind of like one of those like big things as well, where it was like, we weren't doing Vlogbrothers. We weren't making their videos. All we were doing was taking like the idea, making our own videos and
using the day-to-day conversation format.
Exactly. Yeah. So it gave us like a framework. It's like a training plan, you know, again, for like anything where it's like I followed the same training plan and that's like what we did. But hilariously, so I've been watching the TV show Welcome to Wrexham.
Yeah.
And you know, it's all about like Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney purchasing the Wrexham Football Club in Wales. And it's honestly, I would just recommend it in general. I think it's just like a fun watch. It talks a lot about like, you know, soccer/football culture and sort of like the different ways it's been important and impactful in a variety of, you know, from so many different perspectives. Like it's not just sort of like, yeah, soccer, you know, like it's
right.
Very informative in a lot of different ways. But actually on the episode I was watching last night, John Green of the Vlogbrothers is in the episode watching the game with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
And while they're standing there, Ryan Reynolds is talking to John Green and saying, like, yeah, you said to me once upon a time that, like, soccer is the most important, unimportant thing. And he's like, I've stole that line from you, like, and I've used it a million times or whatever. And John Green, while he's standing there, goes, well, I stole it from, like, Pope Francis III. Oh. And, you know, so, like, it was, like, one of those things that was so interesting to me, because every time Ryan Reynolds says soccer is the most important, unimportant thing, he was quoting John Green, who was quoting the Pope.
Do you think Wheezy Waiter was quoting someone else?
No, not necessarily. But I think what's fascinating about it is that, like, it's like, I think more than anything is that, like, it's, if there's this thing that means something to you that you can then, like, you know, regenerate out into the world, it's sort of like, it's like you're paying, like, you know, it's like an homage to the person it came from. It can be flattering, I guess, in that capacity.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I was like, I can't believe the way the dominoes just fit together, that we're talking about, like, early Super Carlin Brothers, which is a Vlogbrother related thing. And, like,
yeah,
you know, I have this example from literally last night. I was like, that's what? So funny. That's wow. So wild. But I also just love that sentiment as well. Like, soccer is the most important, unimportant thing.
Hmm.
Because it doesn't have to be soccer. You don't have to agree with that sentiment. But what I think it recognizes is that, you know, as much as we love certain things in life, they are not all necessarily actively important to the greater ecosystem that we exist within. It's not to disregard the actual problems of the world.
Yeah.
But it's like there can still be important, unimportant things to you, regardless of what those things actually are.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like those things are usually probably, like, the flavor of life. You know, like, yeah, they're the things that, like, you know, it's probably, again, go back to your desert island question. It's like,
yeah,
it's like that is probably the correct answer to the question. Because food, water, shelter are the most important things. Those things are important for all people,
right,
at all times, at the bottom of the needs pyramid.
Yeah.
But what is the most important, unimportant thing to you?
The most unimportant. Yeah. I mean, I ran through. So it sounds like, what are your hobbies, basically? Yeah. A little sometimes.
Yeah, I love hobbies.
Know. I know. Oh, I yeah. know. Me too. And I was like, I even brought that up in therapy. I was like, you know, part of me, what I would love to say is, like, Pokemon cards, but, like, I wouldn't have anyone to play with. You know,
Pokemon what cards am I going to do? And an opponent.
And an opponent.
Who can also be my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. So that wasn't a great answer. Yeah. Unfortunately for me.
Right. But no, I think it's interesting. Like, you know, if, because I think what that does reveal, though, is that it's like, there's a catch that, like, you're being caught up in the rules. But if, like, your mind was like, oh, Pokemon cards, like, that's something I would love. Then it's like, then disregard the rules.
Right.
Then like, assume that there is an opponent,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, and a good one.
Yeah.
One that will, like, be the proper amount of challenging always.
Always.
To, like,
right,
help
yeah.
you, like,
help
like,
you get better.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So indeed, that would be the question, would be like, if you had the ability to do literally nothing else except for become increasingly better all the time at playing Pokemon and existing and surviving otherwise, like, would that be, like, the perfect existence?
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's like, if so, then it's like maybe don't worry about the rules of the question, because the rules don't actually matter. We're all making up the rules to the question from the start anyway.
It's like, if you didn't have to do anything else, what would you want to do right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Split wood.
So split wood, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess I'm bringing an axe.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be such a great answer for you. Be like, I'd bring an axe. It'd be like, no, like, it doesn't have to be like survival things. You'd be like, no, not for surviving, for recreation.
for fun.
For fun.
Well, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay, exactly. So maybe I'll put that on my list.
Put that on your list.
You can add Pokemon cards to your pillow.
Yeah.
And I've got an axe.
There we go. Yeah.
Seems like a good place to stop for today. Again, we have the question from earlier as well. What would you bring to the desert island, assuming that there are rules that are somewhat flexible and bendy as needed?
Yeah.
Food, water, shelter, all the necessary, like, essentials are already accounted for.
The regs.
Yeah. You can email those responses to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Also, reminder that we have that D20 infused rocks glass.
Infused.
Infused. It has become one with. How did you describe it again?
It's just like a rocks glass with a D20 melted into the side.
Melted right into the side.
Yeah.
But it's not glued to it. You
not
know, it's
glued
like, it's
to
like,
it.
It's like literally there's like a dimple.
Yeah. And not that the D20 has been melted. The glass has been melted.
Oh, good clarifier.
Yeah.
Good clarifier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In addition to that, with the quarterly merch, you will also receive a digital download of a brand new episode with brand new characters and a brand new world, you know, D&D episode that Jay and I will be recording.
That's right.
All of that is available at patreon.com/popcornculture. Be sure to go and check it out. It helps support the show just so very much. But otherwise, guys, until next time,
pop pop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.